ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदीनतारिणं परमानन्दमाधवं श्रीचैतन्येश्वरं। नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामीति नामिने। नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे। नमो महावेदन्याय कृष्णप्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्यनाम्ने गौरहत्ये नमः। पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशक्तिकं। हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते। सप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वाञ्छाकल्पतृभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाध श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay, so last time we were discussing Bhagavad Gita chapter 5, text 10 through 12 we discussed last time. So we'll continue our discussion from text 13 onwards. So in text 12, Lord Krishna described two categories of people. One is called Yukta and other is called Ayukta. Yukta is one who is engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. And the other category of people is Ayukta, who is not connected with the Supreme Lord, who is not in Krishna consciousness. So one who is connected, who is engaged in devotional service, he is giving up the result of all his activities and then he attains perfect peace. But the other person who is not connected with the Supreme, he is attached to the result of his work, so he becomes entangled. So, moving to text 13. Sarvakarmani manasa sanyasate sukham vasi नवद्वारे पुरे देहि नैव कुर्वन्न कारयन्। Translation by Srila Prabhupada. When the embodied living being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, he resides happily in the city of nine gates, neither working nor causing work to be done. So, sarva karmani manasah. He is giving up by his mind, controlling his mind. He is renouncing all the action. Thus, he stays happily. Sukham vashi. Navadware pure dehi. So, this material body is considered as the city of nine gates. So the living entity lives peacefully within this body, not attached to the work or the result of this work, mentally renouncing all the actions. So why this body, first of all, is considered as the city of nine gates? So in our body, there are nine holes, which are considered as the nine gates. So the two ears, two eyes, two nostrils, one mouth, anus and genitals. So these are considered as the nine gates of in this body. So the city of nine gates. Now, the living entity is wandering through various lives, attaining one type of body, quitting that body, gaining another type of body. So this cycle keeps going on continuously until one is attached to different work and the result of that work, so that bondage continues. So this city keeps changing. So living entity enters one body, stays in that for some time, then gives up that one, then enters into another one. And how one can become free from this bondage is when one renounces the result of all the actions. In this context, there is a beautiful story from Bhagavatam. So this body is city of nine gates, and the soul, the living entity, is like the king of this city, whose administration is carried out by various ministers, like our ego, intelligence, mind, senses, and different pranavayu, the life airs. So all these are the various ministers who are carrying out the administration of this city. And the reign over the body continues until the time, the eternal kal in the form of death, snatches away everything. So once King Prachinabari, he was discussing with Narad Muni because he wanted to get freedom from this bondage or wanted to gain knowledge. He wanted to gain the pure wisdom through which he can be freed from the bonds of karma. So he approaches Narad Muni to gain this knowledge. And Narad Muni starts telling a story to this King Prachinabari. So he says, once there lived two friends named Puranjana and Avigyathan. And both of these friends, they are living happily. But one time, while wandering, Puranjan, he saw a very nice palace with nine gates. And as he was looking at the palace, which was known as Navadwarapuri, which is the palace with nine gates. So he saw one princess coming out of that palace. So this princess is very beautiful, coming out of the palace, and she is followed by a five-headed snake who is acting as an umbrella over this princess. And she had 11 bodyguards and a lot of soldiers accompanying her. So Puranjana was very impressed with her beauty, and he approached her that, who are you and what are you doing? So she said, I am the princess of this palace, and I am looking for a suitable groom for wedding. And Puranjana was already attracted to her, so he proposed, will you please marry me? So this princess, she agreed. They both got married and they started living in that palace. So this princess, she became Puranjani. So they both got married and started living in this Navadwarapuri. And as they were living happily, there was another girl named Durbhagi. And she is the daughter of Kal. Nobody wanted to marry her. She is also searching for a person to get married. So she approaches Puranjan that I would like to marry, but Puranjan didn't want to marry. And then later on, this daughter of Kal, she has a brother, Chandaveg. So Chandaveg, along with this girl, Durbhagi, and their another brother, Prajwaran, and a most important soldier called Bhayan. So they four of them, they attacked the city where Puranjan and Puranjani were living. So this Durbhagi came trying to embrace Puranjan and he did not want to embrace, but finally the Chand Veg, they had started attacking. The soldier Bhaya came and they all started attacking. Finally Puranjan was killed. So, and she kills the five-headed snake first. And then Puranjan, Parajwaran came and burned the palace. And all of them, they finally Puranjan was killed and Puranjani started crying. And as he was dying, he was thinking of Puranjani. And in his next life, he took birth as a woman. So after he took birth as a woman, she grew up. And she married another person. After some time, this person whom she married, she went to the forest. He went to the forest to perform austerity. And one day while performing austerity, he died. So she wanted to follow her husband and ignite his, while putting fire to his body, she also wanted to jump into that fire. At that time, one Brahmana came there and he started explaining, oh, in your previous life, you were Puranjan. And you were separated from your friend Avigyathan. You got married to Puranjani and then finally you died. And now you are born as a woman in this life. And now you are thinking of your husband and again you will quit your body. So in this last birth, you were thinking of your wife Puranjani. So while thinking of a woman, you got the body of a woman. Now in this life, you are quitting your body, thinking of your husband, thinking of a male. So next body again, you will get a body of a male. So this cycle will keep going on and on and on. So he reminded of his original position. So then she came to her senses and finally the Brahmana told, your friend Avigyathan is still waiting for you. So they both are joined. So both of them meet again and they start living happily. So after hearing this whole story, Prachinabari was a little perplexed and he asked Narad Muni, please explain the meaning to me, what this story really means. So Narad Muni narrates the essence of the story. So what is the essence? So Puranjan is the living entity, the soul. And Avigyathan, the friend of the living entity, is the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always accompanying the living entity. But the living entity, giving up the company of the Supreme Lord, comes into this material world, attains a particular type of body. And then the living entity, this Puranjan, wanted to live in that body. He forgets the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the princesses of that Navdwarpuri, she represents intelligence, buddhi. So Puranjan, the living entity along with intelligence, is living in that body, which is, so this intelligence is, the five-headed snake, which was used, acting as an umbrella, is the panch pran, the five type of life air. The pran, apan, vayan, udhan, saman. So these are the five type of life air, which is accompanying the intelligence. And that we have 11 bodyguards, which are the five gyanendriya, five karmendriya, and the mind. And all these various soldiers, these are the various thoughts that our mind has. So the living entity enters the body. He gets controlled by all these. The mind, intelligence, ego, karmendriya, gyanendriya. And all these, mind has all these various thoughts for enjoyment. So as the living entity is living in this body with 9 gates, the Durbhagi, which was there in that story. So Durbhagi represents the old age. So nobody want to get old age. Everybody is running away from old age. Nobody wanted to marry Durbhagi, but she comes finally and try to embrace everybody. So the old age, no matter if somebody wants it or not, old age comes. And with the old age comes the passing time. So the Kala Veg is the passing time. The Kala means time, Vega means with force. So the time is forcibly passing by. Nobody can stop the time, no matter who the person is. If a very important person, even the prime minister or president of a country, nobody can stop the time. Please stop for me, let me finish this thing. Time does not stop for anybody. So this old age, along with the passing time, with Parajwara. Parajwara is the fever. At the time of death, body has high fever, like 107 degree fever, which is burning the body. And everybody is covered with fear, the bhayam, which is the most important soldier this Kala Veg has. So the old age, with the passing time, along with this fever and bhaya, she attacks the person, and finally the life air is killed. The living entity is forced to leave that particular palace, that body. And based on the thoughts we have at the time of death, the living entity is forced to enter another body. So the living entity attains another city of nine gates. So this cycle continues. The only way to cut down that cycle is with the help of Guru. If one engages in the service of the Supreme Lord, re-establishing our relationship with the Supreme Lord, then one is able to cut down this cycle of birth, death, old age and disease. So that was the whole, this story which Narad Muni narrated. And this is kind of an allegory story, which is, it's not as a real story, but it connects with the bigger scenario of the real life. So after Narad Muni narrated, and we understand from this verse, also from Bhagavad Gita, the living entity is living in this city of nine gates. But if somebody is able to control his mind and intelligence, renounce all the desires for enjoyment, renouncing all the actions and the result of one's actions, then he can live happily, neither working nor causing any bondage to happen. So however, while this body is living in this city of nine gates, or this material body, if the enlightened person, the enlightened living entity, or we say the enlightened yogis, they do not seem themselves, or they do not see themselves as the body, nor they consider themselves as the enjoyer of this body. So rather they try to control all their activities and perform all their activities as if it is as a service to the Supreme Lord. So renouncing all the actions through the mind, these enlightened living entities, enlightened souls, they remain happily within this body. And the analogy which is explained in this verse is actually given in Shveta Shatvara Upanishad also. So in that verse, it says, Navadware pure dehi hanso lelyate bahi vasi sarvasya lokasya sthavarasya charasya cha. So the body, which is consists of nine gates, two ears, two nostrils, two eyes, mouth, anus and genital. So in the material consciousness, the soul residing within the body, it identifies itself with the city of nine gates. But within this body, also residing Supreme Lord as Paramatma, who is the controller of all the living entities in this world. So when the individual living entity establishes its connection with the Supreme Lord, with Paramatma also residing in the heart, then it becomes free, and even while residing in this body. So text 14, the whole thought continues. So the living entity does not become entangled if it does not relate itself with the body. Na krityatvam na karmani lokasya srujati prabhu na karma phala sanyogam sabhavastu pravartate. The embodied living entity, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruit of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. So very significant points here in this verse. So reading the translation again with a little more easy to understand way. So the embodied living entity, which is the master of this city, of his body, it does not have the sense of doership, or basically does not have the sense of proprietorship, does not cause any activities, and nor does he create the fruits of his actions. But how then all this is happening? This is all enacted by the nature acquired from contact with the modes of material nature. So Krishna is using the word na 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 multiple time here. Na kritartvam, na karmani, na karma phala samyogam. So what does it mean? Na kritartvam does not have the sense of doership. So the living entity does not have the sense of doership or proprietorship. Na karmani, it does not cause the activities. Na karma phala samyogam, and it does not create the fruits of one's action. So if the living entity is not doing anything and it is not causing the result of any activity, then who is the doer? So here Krishna says, this is all being enacted by sabhava. Sabhava tu pravartate. So what is sabhava? Sabhava means nature. It's the nature, particular nature one acquires while in contact with the modes of material nature. So as we had discussed earlier, one can get a particular type of nature when it comes in contact with a particular type of body. Because every body has a particular influence of modes of nature. So if somebody is in the body of a hog, it will act in a particular way. It will be forced to act in a particular way. The hog is always looking for dirty things. It's looking for a stool. So hog is eating stool. Even if somebody puts a nice prasadam plate in front of hog, hog is not going to eat that. And hog will leave that and go to the dirty place. But the human being, it has a nature based on different modes of material nature. If somebody is influenced by ignorance or passion or goodness, so a person who is more under the influence of mode of goodness, sattva guna, so he is more attracted to nature, eating fruits, vegetables, those things. Somebody in the mode of ignorance is lazy, under the influence of intoxication, smoking and drinking and just lying idly. So everybody is forced to act based on the nature he has acquired by contact with the modes. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, very nice statement here, the living entity is simply in the midst of material ocean and it is struggling for existence. The waves of ocean are tossing him and he has no control over them. His best solution is to get out of the water by transcendental Krishna consciousness. That alone will save him from all turmoil. So living entity while living in this body is influenced by the modes of nature and it's being forced to act in that way, as the waves of the ocean are tossing the object which is floating in the ocean. So he has no control where it is flown. It is thrown away. But the only solution is to come out of that water. So same way from coming out of this material world, how we can come out of this material world which is like an ocean? By engaging in transcendental Krishna consciousness. So that is the only way to save the living entity. So one may ask, then okay, who is the cause behind any action? If the living entity is not doing, it's the modes of material nature. So it means it's the nature who is acting everything, who is doing everything. So living entity is not responsible for any action. Right? That's why sometimes people may say, after committing any mistakes or sins, one may say, oh no, I did not do this. I am forced to do. Krishna made me like this. So Krishna has forced to work me like this. Krishna has forced me to work like this. So who is really responsible? Is it the living entity who is responsible? Is it the material nature who is responsible? And who takes the responsibility for everything? Who is supposed to get the reaction of all the work? If it's not the living entity, it means it's the material nature. But ultimately, material nature is under the control of the Lord. Because that also Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti Suhyate Sacharacharam. This material nature is working under my direction. So material nature is also not independent. It's working. The Prakriti is working under the control of the Supreme Lord. So it means Krishna is responsible for everything. To answer that question, Krishna already tells in next verse, Nadyate kaschit papam na cheva sukritam vivo Ajnanena avritam jnanam tena muhyanti jantavah. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. The embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. So Krishna is already saying here that don't think then, okay, Supreme Lord is responsible for everything. The Supreme Lord does not assume anybody's sinful or pious activities. It's not that if somebody is doing any good activity, that's also being influenced, directly influenced by the Lord. Or if somebody is engaged in any sinful activities, so the Supreme Lord is responsible for that. However, it's the individual living entity who is bewildered. How is one bewildered? Because of ignorance. And this ignorance covers one's real knowledge. Ajnanena vritam jnanam. So, ajnan, which is ignorance, it covers up the knowledge, jnanam. And tena muhiyanti jantava. So the living entity is bewildered. So how every action actually starts? Who is really the doer? Who is really the doer, karta, and responsible for the result of the action? Because somebody may say, after committing crime, after killing somebody, or sometimes as in some movie they showed that, okay, one person slapped another person and then they said, no, 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 I did not hit you. It's the Lord who is sitting in my heart. He has forced me to slap you, so I am not responsible. So, but who is really responsible? So to understand that, let's consider one analogy. Let's say if a tree is being cut, so who is behind that action? Is it the axe who was used to cut the tree? Or is that the woodcutter who has used that axe to cut the tree? So who is really responsible in cutting the tree? So both are responsible in one way. The axe is also responsible and the woodcutter is also responsible. But who gets the reaction? So to understand that, let's talk about the different doers. So here in this topic, Krishna is speaking about three different doers. Three karta, teen karta. And who are these three karta, three doers? One is the living entity. So the living entity is considered as the initiating cause. He is the initiating karta. Because everything starts with the desire. And as the living entity desires, the material nature provides the facility. So the material nature is the second cause, which is considered as the instrumental cause. So here in this example, the woodcutter is the initiating cause and the axe is the instrumental cause. So, initiating cause is ultimately responsible for the reaction because based on his desire to cut the tree, he used the axe. So, the axe is given as a facility and the strength in the woodcutter is also given as a facility by the material nature and he uses those instruments to cut the tree. So, let's take another example to understand a little even bigger picture of that, who is really the doer. So, for example, if a criminal is given a life sentence by the judge, so who is responsible for him to take that imprisonment, lifetime imprisonment? Is the judge responsible? Is the police responsible who caught that criminal? Or is it the criminal himself responsible? So, here, the criminal is the initiating cause who committed any crime. The police is the instrumental cause who caught that criminal and the judge is the sanctioning cause who sanctioned the punishment. So, what are the three causes here? The initiating cause, the instrumental cause and the sanctioning cause. So here, if a living entity is enjoying or suffering in this material world, so the living entity is ultimately the initiating cause, because it starts with the desire which causes everything, or which starts the activity. So the living entity is the initiating cause. The material nature is the instrumental cause. And the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul, Paramatma in the heart, is the sanctioning cause. So as you say, man proposes, God disposes. So the living entity wants to act in a particular way, has some desire to enjoy in a particular way, influenced by ignorance. Because ignorance has covered up one's real identity. So the living entity is imagining, living in that body, it relates itself with the body. So it's imagining all these pleasures and pains. So the living entity, based on a particular desire to enjoy in a particular way, being influenced by that ignorance, it starts that action. And the material nature provides the facility to fulfill that particular action. And the Super Soul is sanctioning that any work. So it all starts with ignorance, which leads to desire to enjoy, which brings in bondage. So let's see what Prabhupada writes in the purport. So here the Supreme Lord is considered as Vibhu. Vibhu means who is unlimited. So the living entity is full of knowledge, but he is prone to be influenced by ignorance due to his limited power. But the Supreme Lord is omnipotent. Lord is Vibhu, but the living entity is Anu. And because the living soul, he has the capacity to desire by his free will, such desire is fulfilled by the omnipotent Lord. And the Lord is the constant companion of the living entity as Paramatma. Therefore, he can understand the desire of individual living entity, as one can smell the flavor of a flower by being near to the flower. So man proposes and God disposes. So from these three set of verses, we understand the living entity, while living in this body, because of ignorance, his real identity, his real knowledge is covered. He tried to act under the influence of the modes of material nature, and then he becomes bound because of being the initiating cause of every work. And then text 16 and 17, Krishna describe how one can be free again when one is enlightened with the knowledge. So when, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything, as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. So when one return back to its original position, comes to the state of knowledge, he can again become free from this bondage. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam Janmanam Ante Gyanvanam Prapadyate. After many, many lifetimes, Bahunam Janmanam Ante, the real intelligent person, he surrenders unto the Supreme Lord. Then he is established in its perfect knowledge. So after passing through many, many births, one's knowledge is perfected, he surrenders it to the Supreme Lord. When one attains to the state of Krishna consciousness, then everything is revealed to him. As the analogy given here is, as everything is revealed by sun in the daytime. So at night, one may be not able to see even one's own hand, one's own face in a complete dark room. But as soon as one turns on the light bulb, as the room is filled with light, he is able to see everything. It's same way as the morning comes, as the sun comes in the sky, the darkness is destroyed and everything becomes visible. So same thing, same way as living entity while living in this body comes to the level of knowledge, to the perfect knowledge, knowing I am not this body, I am the spirit soul, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and I need to be connected back to my Supreme Father, Lord Krishna. So as one comes to that level of knowledge, all his nisayans is destroyed. So Krishna Surya Saman Maya Hai Andhkar Jaha Krishna Tahir Nahi Maya Radhikar. So otherwise we are always under the influence of Maya. And Maya is compared to darkness. So Maya is like darkness and Krishna is like sun. Krishna Surya Saman. And wherever it's the jurisdiction of Krishna, Maya cannot enter, the darkness cannot enter. So when one comes to the level of Krishna consciousness, to the position of Krishna consciousness, he is not bewildered. So even though one may come to the understanding, I am not the body, but I am the spirit soul, but only that understanding is also not enough. Because one has not come to the level of understanding the difference between the soul and the super soul. One need to know the difference between soul and super soul also. Otherwise, if somebody start thinking the soul and super soul is same, that I am also the Supreme Lord, I will become the Supreme Lord, that is considered as the last snare of Maya. Because one will fall down from that position. That knowledge is not the ultimate knowledge. So living entity is bewildered in so many ways. When he start thinking himself to be God, he actually falls into this last snare of Maya. If the living entity is God, then how can it become bewildered by this Maya? Does God ever become bewildered by Maya? So if God can become bewildered by Maya, it means Maya is greater than God. So sometimes people say this, right? That, oh, I am also God, you are also God. Right now, you are not realizing your real position. But when you come out of the influence of Maya, then you will know that I am the same Supreme Lord. So what that person is saying, I am God, but right now I am under the influence of Maya. When this curtain of Maya is removed, then I will realize I am God. So it means Maya is something bigger than God, who can control God also. So that is the wrong philosophy, or one is not in the real knowledge. So one need to understand not just that I am the spirit soul, not this body, but along with that, one need to understand the difference between the soul and super soul. What is my relationship with the Supreme Lord? I am part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and my position is to serve the Supreme Lord. Jivar Savrup Hoy Krishner Nityadas. The position of living entity is to always serve the Supreme Lord. So when one comes to this real knowledge about his real position, he is enlightened with knowledge and all this Maya is destroyed, all this nisayans, this ignorance is destroyed, and then everything becomes revealed to him. And what is the characteristic of such person? Tad buddhya, tad atmana, tad nishtha, tad parayana, gachyante apunar avritam jnana nirud nirdhuta kalmashah. When one's intelligence, mind, faith and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgiving through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. So here Krishna uses many wonderful words here to describe the position, how one can take complete shelter of the Supreme Lord, or how one can proceed on the path of liberation. Tad buddhayas, whose intelligence is always in the Supreme. Tat Atmanas, whose mind is always fixed on the Supreme. Tat Nishthas, whose faith is only meant for the Supreme. Tat Parayana, who has completely taken shelter of the Supreme. So these are the four characteristics Krishna describes how one can finally attain the Supreme Lord, progress on the path of liberation. So we need to purify our mind and intelligence and connect our mind and intelligence on the Supreme Lord. Fix our mind and intelligence on the Supreme Lord. And the other aspect is Tat Nishtha. We need to have complete faith in the Supreme Lord. And Tat Parayana, have complete shelter on the Supreme Lord. So this Nishtha, so here Krishna uses the word Nishtha, not as an ordinary faith as a beginning stage, but the fixed faith which has grown multifold, it has become as Nishtha. So there is a difference in Shraddha and Vishwas, or Shraddha and Nishtha, which we have discussed earlier also. In the beginning, one may have a slight faith or slight attraction for something. Somebody may have attraction towards various Devi Devatas. Somebody may have little Shraddha towards various particular Devi Devatas. But when that faith grows and grows, it becomes so strong, it becomes as Nishtha, a fixed Vishwas. One may have earlier Shraddha in somebody, we may hear somebody and like that person's talk and develop little faith in that person. But that Shraddha may change to some other object or some other person. But the Nishtha is which is fixed, it is unshakable. So ultimately Krishna has given us two things, our heart and mind, right? Dil or Dimag. And we should utilize our heart to connect ourselves with the Supreme Lord. But in the material world, we are utilizing these two things in a perverted way. We use our mind to analyze this material nature, to analyze the Supreme Lord. But we put our heart into the objects of this material world. So it should be other way. We should use our mind to analyze this material world and the objects of this material world and put our heart in the Supreme Lord. Right? लोग क्या करते हैं इस संसार में तो अपना दिल लगाते हैं और जब भगवान के बारे में समझने की बात आती है तो उस पर अपना दिमाग लगाते हैं अरे ऐसा कैसे हो सकता है कोई How can the Supreme Lord do this? How can it do that? How somebody is getting the reaction of his work like this? Why somebody is enjoying so much and somebody is suffering? So we put our mind when it comes to understand the Supreme Lord. But when it comes to dealing in this material world, then we blindly follow everything. We put our heart into that. And Supreme Lord says that you put your heart in me. You keep my instruction in your heart. There is a particular pastime of Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva. When Lord Vishnu comes to tell Lord Shiva to marry Parvati Devi. So he gives that instruction that as per my instruction, you go and marry Parvati. So after Sati had quit her body and she reappears as Parvati, but Lord Shiva is engaged in the meditation. And he does not want to marry. So Lord Vishnu comes and tell him that as per my instruction, you listen to my instruction and marry Parvati. And Lord Shiva says, okay, I will keep your order on my head. And Lord Vishnu jokingly says, no, don't keep my order on your head. Keep it in your heart. Whatever we keep on our head, jo bhi apne dimag mein rakhte hain, wo cheez nikal jati hai. But if something is in the heart, then that thing stays. We have that experience in our daily routine life also. If something is stuck in the heart, that thing stays. Agar kisi ne kuch hame galat bol diya, kisi ne kuch hame harshly, somebody told some harsh words, those get stuck in the heart. And even if we say, okay, don't keep something in your heart, just let it go. But we are holding on to those things, and it's very difficult to give that up. Even if some senior devotee will tell, oh, just let it go. Please forgive him or forget that thing. And say, Prabhuji, kaise jaane de? How can I let it go? It has stuck in my heart. Dil mein chubh gaya hai. But whatever is something kept in our mind, that is easily forgotten sometimes. Sometimes when we go to office, right, the spouse may tell, the wife may tell the husband, okay, when you come in the evening, bring tomatoes, bring milk, bread, this, that. And the husband keeps it in his mind, okay, main apne dimag mein rakhunga is cheez ko, that I need to bring these things. But in the evening, while coming back, maybe he brings two things and forget two things. And what is the common phrase we use? Arey, ye to dimag se nikal gaya. Oh, I completely forgot about this. So what happens is, whatever is in the mind, it's easily forgettable. But something which is in the heart, jis cheez ko dil pe laga liya, it's very difficult to forget that. So Lord says, whose faith is fixed in me, who is using his heart in engaging himself with me, then he progresses towards me. He has taken complete shelter of me. So then the next word comes, tatparayanah, who has complete shelter. Not just once in a while taking shelter of the Lord when only the problem comes. So people take shelter of the Supreme Lord. People approach God when they are in some problem. Right? We always go to the temple or pray, oh, mera ye kaam karwa do, meri ye problem solve kar do. So people approach God, take shelter of God in time of difficulty. But here Krishna is saying, who has always taken complete shelter of me. And what is this meaning of shelter? What does shelter really mean? So there are six divisions of shelter, which is described as anukulasya sankalpa pratikulasya varjanam rakshishyati vishwaso gopatritve varnam tatha atmanikshepakarpanye shadvidha sharanagati. So surrender means sharanagati, right? Shelter. And there are six categories or six divisions of shelter, taking shelter, surrendering. What is that? Anukulasya sankalpa. So making a sankalpa, determination to accept those things which are favorable for engaging in Krishna consciousness. So accepting the things which are favorable for devotional service, pratikulasya varjanam, and rejecting those things which are unfavorable for progressing in Krishna consciousness. So the association of mundane worldly people, engaging in nonsense activities, not engaging in activities which break the four religious principles. So, giving up the things which are unfavorable. Rakshishyati Vishwaso, having full conviction that Krishna will give protection in every situation. Gopatritve Varnam Tatha, accepting the Lord as one's guardian or master. Atma Nikshepa Karpanye, being completely, having complete humility, karpanne, and atma nikshepa, fully surrendering to the Lord. That is the six divisions of surrender. So like we hear the pastime of Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj is considered who has taken full shelter of the Supreme Lord, surrendered everything to the Supreme Lord. When Vamandev came, right, when Lord came as dwarf Brahmana and begged the three steps of land, in two steps Lord filled everything. He covered the whole universe in his two steps and asked, where should I keep the third step now? And at that time Bali Maharaj, he fell down at the feet of Vamandeva and said, please put your third feet, put the feet at my head, so I take complete shelter of you. So that is surrendering everything to the Supreme Lord. That is taking complete shelter. So in this way, when somebody has engaged his intelligence, his mind, and his complete faith and taken shelter of the Lord, then he is proceeding straight on the path of liberation. So when one is fully in Krishna consciousness, is undoubtedly washed clean of all misgivings, and is in perfect knowledge, so a Krishna conscious person can thoroughly understand that there is duality within, like simultaneous identity and individuality. I am the living entity. I have the qualities same as the Supreme Lord, but I am still different from the Supreme Lord. I have limited capacity. I am Anu, whereas the Supreme Lord is Vibhu. So in that way, when somebody comes to the level of transcendental knowledge, he makes steady progress on this path of liberation. So with that, we'll stop here. If anybody has any question and comment.
Hare Krishna, Prabhupada, Nityananda, Pranam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Guru Maharaj. I really like the lecture and especially the part, the take home which I could get it, was the fact how you differentiated between the mind and the heart. Actually, when people try to rationalize things, they try to use, and rather they do not want to believe in the God, they try to bring in rationalization by using their mind rather than using their heart. And even it comes to the situations where we should be using things of forgiveness and other things, we take it to the heart what other person has said, which actually should be the other way around. And as you rightly said, that in the devotional service, we have to, if we have to act with our heart, then when it enters through the heart, then that's when it's going to really happen. Krishna Prema. Thank you so much, Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji, for summarizing.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, Pindal Pranam. From text 15, not the Supreme Lord assumes anyone's sinful or pious activities.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is doing sinful activity or pious activity, that is nothing to do with the Supreme Lord. Is this
right,
correct?
So this is in answer to the question somebody may raise, that okay,
yeah,
I am not the doer, I am forced to act in a certain way, so I should not be punished for my sinful activity. The Supreme Lord is the cause of everything. So even if we say material nature is causing, but material nature is under the control of the Supreme Lord. So ultimately, Supreme Lord is causing everything. Either it's a pious activity or an impious activity. Either it's something good activity or a sinful activity. So Supreme Lord is behind everything. So why I should be punished? He is the cause behind everything. So that's why Krishna here says, the Supreme Lord does not take credit of anybody's sinful or pious activities. It's a basically embodied living entity who is responsible, because he is acting based on bewilderment caused by ignorance. So the living entity is the initiating karta, initiating cause behind every action. Even though the Supreme Lord is providing the facility through material nature and is sanctioning the particular activity, but living entity is responsible for his action, being the initiating cause.
Prabhu, but Krishna says like, whoever do service, like devotion service to me, they are very dear to me. That means he's considered, right?
No, he is concerned. He is living in the heart. He is looking at everybody's desire and sanctioning the desire accordingly. So if somebody desire to engage in the service of the Lord, Krishna specially take care of that, in the sense he provides the facility. That's why I say, we take one step towards God, he takes 10 steps towards us. Right? So he specially provide the facility for us to engage in devotional service. He makes arrangements in the form of providing us association of devotees. He will provide the facility in terms of some spiritual text literature. He will provide the facility in the form of a guru. So Krishna provides the facility to, based on the desire of living entity. If living entity is desiring to be away from Krishna, Krishna does not interfere the free will of the living entity. Krishna provides that facility also. And if the living entity has the desire to come closer to Krishna, so Krishna specially takes care of that to provide facility.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Prabhu.
Anybody else has any question or comment? Okay, otherwise we'll end here. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Anant Koti Vaishnav Vrinda ki jai.
Iske Sindran Prabhu ji ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu.